Good evening, and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. You can find us on the internet at commonwealthclub.org. I'm Christina Namath, Travel Director at the Commonwealth Club. Our program tonight, Ethical Destinations, Putting Your Travel Money Where Your Mouth is about the economic power of the collective traveling community. Every November, Berkeley-based Ethical Traveler releases its often controversial list of the world's best ethical destinations. And tonight, we'll learn which countries made this year's list and why. Our guests are Malia Everett, Director of Global Exchange Reality Tours, and Jeff Greenwald, Executive Director of Ethical Traveler. Since 1997, Malia Everett has been the Director of Global Exchange's Reality Tours program. She's overseen the growth and development of alternative travel programs, study seminars, and fact-finding human rights delegations to 40 destinations around the world. Her programs involve in-depth experiential education and socially responsible travel as an alternative to the type of sun and fun tourism that does little to benefit local communities and host economies. Malia has facilitated many tours that focus on international relations, human rights, political economy, sustainable development, women's issues, and the resilience of indigenous cultures. She's written numerous articles about socially responsible travel. Most recently, she was a contributor to the Blue Pages, a directory of companies rated by their politics and practices, and of an educational textbook titled Ecotourism and Sustainable Tourism, Transitioning into the New Millennium, to be published in 2012. Malia is involved with many local environmental and human rights groups in the Bay Area. She serves on several advisory boards, including the board of Ethical Traveler. She also works as a consultant for established and emerging tourism companies. Perhaps, and most importantly, she is the proud mother of two intrepid, curious, and well-traveled sons. Jeff Greenwald is a journalist, photographer, and award-winning author with six books and hundreds of print, radio, and internet features under his byline. His journalism career began in 1979 when he reported on his experiences as a water engineer at the Khao Ai Dang refugee camp on the Thai-Cambodian border. Since that time, he's traveled throughout the world, reporting on prison labor in China, female circumcision in Africa, human rights in Tibet, Nepal's environmental challenges, wildlife stewardship in Vietnam, and coral reef conservation from Belize to Palau. His books include Shopping for Buddhas, The Size of the World, and recently released Snake Lake, set in Nepal during the 1990 democracy revolution. As he circled the globe writing The Size of the World, in 1993 and 1994, Greenwald posted dispatches to GNN, the Global Network Navigator, describing his journey. Consequently, he's hailed by several writers as an internet pioneer for creating the first international blog. In 2003, Jeff began performing strange travel suggestions, an improvised monologue based on his adventures. Jeff is the executive director of the nonprofit Ethical Traveler, a global community dedicated to exploring the ambassadorial potential of world travel. Please join me in welcoming Malia Everett and Jeff Greenwald.
Thank you, Christina. I just want to say that I met Christina several years ago, and we've talked since our first meeting about doing a program here, and it's wonderful to finally be here doing just a wonderful program with such a terrific turnout, a great audience. I recognize many of you. Thank you so much for coming, and it's an honor to be here with one of my favorite fellow travelers, many of my favorite fellow travelers. So there's a quote attributed to Muhammad where he apparently said, "Don't tell me how educated you are. Tell me how much you've traveled." And, you know, the subtext of that quote, it's kind of like this idea that for the past 1,500 years at least, maybe much longer, travel has all been about personal transformation, and we all kind of know that. We all know how we've been transformed by our travels. But I think that in the current world that we live in the information age, in this whatever we want to call this new wildly communicative age that we're entering, travel has got to be about really about more than personal transformation. Travel is really an opportunity in our day and age to transform the whole world. In 2003, I co-founded this organization, Ethical Traveler. And it was inspired at that point by the crisis in Burma, in Myanmar, where Aung San Suu Kyi had asked travelers and tourists not to travel to Burma because of the political strife and the human rights abuses committed by the junta there. So with a few very like-minded friends, we sat down and we created an organization that was modeled in some ways on an organization you're all very familiar with, the Sierra Club. Now, most of you know that for its first 100 years, the Sierra Club was just a club of hikers and campers and climbers. But it was in the 1950s that David Brower came in and said, hey, who better to protect these endangered national parks and mountains and treasures of the United States than the people who love to visit them the most? And it was with that inspiration that we went ahead and founded Ethical Traveler, the idea being that who better to protect the world than those of us who have been transformed by traveling through it. And as the world becomes more interconnected, becoming an ethical traveler becomes even easier and yet more and more urgent. Travelers have access to tons more information now than they had even 10 years ago. And we can see almost in real time the impact of the choices that we make as we go around the world and where we spend our money and how we comport ourselves. So let me tell you what we do at Ethical Traveler very briefly, just so you get an idea of what our organization is really about. Our motto, our mission, which is on our little stickers out there, is very simple. It says, empowering travelers to change the world. And that's kind of a nutshell description of our greatest aspiration. We do a lot of things at Ethical Traveler. We launch action campaigns, literally snail mail campaigns, in countries that have exploitive environmental practices and human rights abuses. And think of the power of that when the Ministry of Tourism in a country, not the president or prime minister, but the Ministry of Tourism, who's got the hand on the faucet for foreign exchange, gets hundreds of snail mail letters from people all over the world saying, I'm a member of the organization Ethical Traveler. We're aware of what we're doing, and we have a choice of where we spend our money. It has an impact. At least we really hope it does. That's one thing we do. We keep our membership informed about what's going on in the developing world through our absolutely wonderful news team. We educate people how to be better, more ambassadorial travelers, and you can see sort of a little example of that in the bookmarks that you can pick up out there. And once a year, in November, December, we conduct an exhaustive search for the 10 countries strictly in the developing world, that are the most deserving of your travel dollars and of your support and of your interest. And on that note, I'd like for Malia to tell you a bit about Global Exchange and what they do.
Thank you. I'm going to pull this a little closer here. I just want to start out honoring the incredible work of the Commonwealth Club. And thank you, Christina, so much for including me and Global Exchange Reality Tours with your program, both professionally and also just personally. I've known about the incredible work you've done for so long. And it's an honor for me as well to be working with and be on the advisory group board of the Ethical Traveler. It's incredible to live your life in the day-to-day and give back to incredible causes that you deeply care about and be in service. So I just wanted to start with gratitude. In terms of what I get to talk about next in Global Exchange and Reality Tours, I just wanted to see how many people know about Global Exchange here? Wow. Oh, my gosh. Incredible. So I won't go in too much in terms of what we do. I will introduce Reality Tours in a moment. For those of you who don't know, Global Exchange is a nonprofit human rights organization that was established back in 1988. So we've been around for, 23, 24 years. It is an organization that is, is deeply, deeply committed to educating North Americans about the impacts of our foreign and economic policies and providing alternatives to them. So whether it's issues of political injustice, social or environmental, Global Exchanges have been on the front line of incredible education and, you know, grassroots campaigns. So it's been a privilege for me to be a part of that organization and running and now co-running a reality tourist program. So a lot of the times people say, well, why would a human rights organization, why would a nonprofit, you know, have a travel component? And, you know, I can just go on and on and on about, you know, how important it is for those of us that live or under the jurisdiction of, you know, the United States. What is our history around the world? And where can we educate ourselves and our population and be a force for positive change? So Reality Tours was one of the first programs of Global Exchange, in addition to our fair trade stores that I know I was chatting with somebody who lives in Noy Valley earlier and was like, is that the same Global Exchange? I was like, yes, absolutely. You know, we want to educate people about the power of their consumption, the power of their choices, and to be able to really put their dollars and their political perspectives and philosophies into concrete practice in a day-to-day. And what better way to do that also with travel, which we'll get into in a bit. Reality Tours, you know, it's before the whole reality tour or a reality television phenomena, you know, you see on TV all the time these days. But it was, you know, what happens if you bring people, bring groups of people around the world to learn about important issues impacting them? And you learn about it firsthand. So like the Commonwealth Club and their travel program that is deeply educational, Reality Tours was founded on experiential education. So often when I get to talk to students, for example, about the pedagogy of Paulo Freire and John Dewey, you know, we talk about experiential education, and each trip is a story, it's a conversation, it's a series of invitations to invite people to learn and hear the stories firsthand of people who are being impacted directly by the impacts of, in many cases, our foreign policy. Or how about if we get to be re-inspired by what so many incredible people are doing around the world that we can learn from and benefit from here? We often have so much privilege and so much material resources at our beck and call, and yet we do so little with them. And I'm constantly re-inspired by communities around the world, from South Africa to Cuba to, you know, Jordan. You know, what people are doing with so little, with no excuses, because there's no other alternative. And so Reality Tours, besides experiential education, and I'll talk about this in a minute, but, you know, we really promote socially responsible travel, both ethically and as a business model, and hope and intend that people get involved when they get back. They do something. And that's what's personally kept me there for almost 15 years in my journey. The fact that I know day to day that people come back and say, wow, I was on that trip with you in Brazil, and, you know, I live in Richmond, California, and now I learned this, and I'm going to do this. Or, you know, the teacher, the professor of political science at Suffolk University that comes back to me and says, wow, I'm incorporating that into my curriculum. And 2 years later, I travel with them to Uganda, and they have funded and created Frese, which is a treatment and rehabilitation center for people, for child soldiers in South Africa, or excuse me, Uganda. So I won't go into the principles of what we do too much, but that is why Reality Tours exists. That's why and how we benefit, if you will, the mission of Global Exchange. Right back to you, Jeff.
I had mentioned before about 2003 when Ethical Traveler was founded, and it was in regards to the situation in Burma. And at that point, in October of 2003, I published an op-ed piece in the Washington Post that was called Voting with Our Wings. And the idea was that Aung San Suu Kyi had asked people not to go to Burma. And it seemed a simple enough thing not to go. And yet people still were going to Burma. And yet it occurred to me, reading her statement, and this is what I wrote the op-ed about, what would happen if travelers really did vote with their wings? What would happen if travelers really did get together and sort of put their money and their voices where their itineraries, where their wings are? I mean, when you and then I started to do more research into that, and I got together with a few people to put together this nonprofit, because when you think about it, it becomes this overwhelmingly great idea. It's sort of like travel has overtaken oil, steel, the automobile industry, aerospace, everything as the largest financial power in the world. Of course, that includes business travel and domestic travel in places like China and India and all over the world. But it's a $5 trillion a year industry. Now, what if you could get the people who love to travel, who care about travel the way that everyone in this room does, to actually join together and become a political action group? How powerful would that group be? What kind of incredible economic power would a group like that hold in its hand? And that is the idea of what we started to do with this organization, is the idea that people really could vote with your wings. You can tell countries that are doing the wrong thing, if they're cutting down an old-growth forest, if they're building a dam and displacing indigenous people, if they're selling women or children into sex slavery. You know, you have every right to write a letter to those people through us or on your own saying, listen, I get one vacation a year. I've got $3,000, $4,000 to spend. I'm not going to spend it in a place where the police chief is benefiting from child prostitution. Get your act together, okay? And then on the other hand, you know, the flip side of that also occurred to us. What if you find places that are really trying to do wonderful things and really understand that foreign exchange through travel and tourism is their ticket into a future where sustainable fuels and strip mining and tearing up their coral reefs and building big hotels is really not going to cut it anymore. Okay, they understand this and they want to do something that's better than all these things that have come before. Well, what if people go to these places and steer their money there and their attention there? How much good could that do? So it's this sort of double-sided power that we have, and it's really extraordinary. And I think it's really what we're going to be looking at, a transformation of that kind of travel in the near future. And it's more than economic. You know, we all know what's happening with the world right now. And we all know that as travelers, we are, whether we like it or not, de facto ambassadors. That people in countries all over the world judge America by the Americans that visit their country. And that Americans who visit a place, like a woman here told me that she just came back from Iran. I know that I recently came back from Cuba. Many people have been to Israel. That when we come back from those countries, the experiences we have become widely disseminated through our blogs, through the internet, through the stories we tell our friends over dinner. And we become these mouthpieces for change. And I think that's really the trajectory that we want to see travel coming as a lever for financial change and as a total, you know, mouthpiece for ambassadorial change and relation improvement, cultural relation improvement. So I'm going to let you
sometimes
take over.
When I listen to you talk, Jeff, I just want to write down your one-liners.
I always forget
absolutely.
Them after I say them.
Absolutely. Yeah, we were chatting about the importance of social responsibility earlier in the travel industry, and really voting with your wings and what that means as both an individual and those of us involved with the travel industry. And one of the things that I wanted to do is just kind of reiterate the incredible potential that the travel industry has to be an industry for good and an industry for really helping communities around the world develop, emerging alternative energy and, you know, human rights situations and benefiting the ecology and development of nations around the world. I want to run through a few statistics, so you'll pardon if I lose my eye contact for a moment. When we look at the global travel industry, you know, it's huge. I mean, some people say that it's one of the largest industries outside of the illegal ones of, you know, arms trafficking, human trafficking, and narcotics, et cetera. The statistics may be a little old, but if you want to proof check them, I say go check out the United Nations WTO, not the World Trade Organization, the World Tourism Organization, and you'll see that they say that, you know, travel as a global industry accounts for about 10.4, that was 2008, so 10 to 11% of the GDP, over 11% of our total consumption spending, and that since the 1950s, it's averaged an annual growth rate of 12%. And so even given that recession that we're facing, even given travel impacted post-September 11th, for example, that's huge growth. Yeah. International tourism generated U.S. dollars, $944 billion in 2008. And that accounts for about 30% of the world's exports. So that, again, we're talking about big business. World estimates are that by 2020, there'll be 1.6 billion arrivals, surpassing $2 trillion a year. Again, we have a huge potential as travelers, both people in the travel industry as well as individuals, to really vote with our wings, to make sure that our dollars impact positively in terms of our choices. I do want to talk about the underbelly, though. I'm notorious for being a devil's advocate with boots. And one of the things that I really want to say is that, you know, those of us that are in the travel industry, even the alternative travel industry, have an obligation, both ethically and as business providers. You know, really, why? When you look at all-inclusive travel purchases, you know, the Hotwires, the Travelocities, the Sandals, the Club Meds, excuse me for naming some names, 80% of that purchase is Capital Flight. It is retained or leaked back to the North. What that means is that if you spend $1,000, $800 stays in the United States or in the UK or in London. It is not benefiting the local Jamaicans where you're vacationing. It's not going to the Bahamas. It's not staying in, again, the local economy. 40 to 90%. And I know it's a huge variety. I mean, I was at the Thais Ecotourism Conference 2 years ago, and the gentleman from Gap, Bruce Poon, I'm going to forget his name. Yeah, he mentioned that it's up to 90% of Capital Flight in the tourism industry now. And what that means, again, is 90% is going to profit, is staying in the North, going in the global North, and not benefiting, you know, the local economy or the national economy of the countries around the world that we are running tours to. I know that, that ratio really varies. You know, when you're looking at the Caribbean, for example, that's 80%. When you're looking at places, for example, in India, it's a lot better. They've got a diversified travel economy. And that is about 40%. In places like Thailand, it's 70%. So again, when you're making your purchases, what I want to say is, you know, it's really, really important to ask the questions, where does your money go? Who owns your property? And really think about making the important choices to benefit the local economy. And you can do that both as an individual traveling, that's why I love to support organizations like Ethical Traveler, or as a group travel, because there's many, many organizations like Reality Tours, Commonwealth Club, but others that ensure that your dollars are actually, again, benefiting the local or national economy.
We talked about what I was saying before was very much about the sort of carrot and stick approach, that the action campaigns we do are sort of the stick, and this list we do every year is kind of like the carrot. What Malia says about Capital Flight is true. You know, you can go to a place in Thailand or in Brazil or anywhere, and a tremendous amount of your money will go back to the United States or the UK or Russia or Israel or whatever big country owns those hotels or that beach or whatever else. But there are places all over the world that are actually trying to change that whole equation. And what they're doing is they're taking as much money as they can from the tourist economy. They can't always control the international airlines that fly into their airports, but they can control the hotels, the beaches, the food, the places you stay. And they are seeing that not only does the money stay in country, but it benefits their education system. It benefits their indigenous population. It helps. It's used to create clean water, solar power. It cleans up their environment. And these are the places we want to hold out the carrot to. Is places that do exactly that sort of thing. Why don't you just talk a little bit about how we work together? Can we even talk about that? I mean, it's so
sure,
it's just
Jeff.
So it's like, you know,
I buy you wine, you buy me dinner. Just kidding.
That's kind of what I mean. And then I'll talk about the list itself and how we come to the list and you know, so forth and so on.
Great.
But just like a little bit about how Global Exchange and Ethical Traveler worked together.
Yeah, in 2003 when I was returning from Vietnam, I remember that's when I learned about your organization being launched. And I thought, wow, what an incredible concept. Like, you know, Reality Tours and Global Exchange, we have certain kinds of campaigns that we're running to promote human rights and social justice around the world. But the idea, like you said, this global pack, the incredible potential that we have as a global international community of travelers to really apply pressure was incredible. And so we've been historically a partner to Ethical Traveler in campaigns on important issues that I just think are incredible. And we have a, how would I say, we have an obligation to address. And these are issues that we allow to happen in terms of our global demand. I'm talking specifically around human trafficking and around sex tourism and what happens around, as you mentioned,
building environmental
and protection. Environmental issues as well, and ecology, and our need, for example, for eco lodges and beautiful areas and pristine habitats, and the impacts of that on these ecosystems, and also in the coral reefs that you were mentioning. So the ability for us to work together and to bring to our members and to people who care deeply about these issues is just a natural, wonderful fit.
One of the advantages that Global Exchange has, that Ethical Traveler is an all-volunteer organization. None of us draw a salary. And there's more than 20 to 25 of us now working with the organization. Whereas at Global Exchange, people actually are, it's their job. Mm-hmm. And so they have a little more freedom and time to investigate and look into campaigns and things around the world that they then notify us about and say, hey, we just came across this problem from one of our offices in Peru or in Botswana. Why don't you consider doing a campaign in this area? And I just want to put out to all of you in this room now, and of course I hope that you'll join Ethical Traveler. You know, it's free to join, and put your name in the mailing list out there, so that we can contact you. Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Join Ethical Travelers mailing list. Or
saying
you can learn more about our important human rights and ecological rights campaigns.
That's right. I was inviting you all to come up with campaigns. If any of you want to look into campaigns that you think things that an organization like ours might want to focus on or pay attention on, take a look at them, see who else is working on them. And just let us know about them, because that's information that we really prize. We prize it highly. And in fact, we're really looking for some kind of volunteer who will, work on that with us, just generating campaigns. So that's always something that we're trying to get, because we don't have a salaried person doing that for us.
And just to chime in, I mean, it's through you and those of you who are also in the industry. I mean, you may run across a development project that is related to a tourism project. And if that's going on and is displacing indigenous communities or really will negatively impact a vulnerable ecosystem, these are the types of campaigns that we're looking for. So we really can leverage our members and ensure that they're putting pressure on the ministries of tourism. And I just want to say, Ethical Travel has had a positive track record. And so for those of you volunteers that are here, I see a few, thank you for your labor and thank you for your passion and your service. I mean, the fact that you're not getting paid and you do this out and beyond is really incredible. And it's made a change in the lives and the bugs and the other things that are in the day-to-day lives of, biodiversity around the world.
So let me talk about the ethical destinations list this year, and then we'll open up the floor for questions. And I'm going to go through this fairly quickly. So we don't really do campaigns or do action in the developed world. We don't do campaigns in China or Japan or the United States, though people always ask us about it, because these countries don't rely on travel dollars, tourism dollars, to support their economy the way a country like Cambodia or Peru or Botswana might. So we really turn our attention to the developing world. Every year, starting about 3 months ago, we have a team. This year we have six people go through the three main indices, which are the CIA, the World Bank, and International Monetary Fund, the IMF. And each one of them has a list of the developing countries in the world. If a country is on two of those lists, we consider a developing country. So we get this long list of about 150 developing countries in the world. Then we look at those countries through three lenses: social welfare, human rights, and environmental protection. And we use over 25 different indices compiled around the world by different organizations to decide which countries are the best lot of those 150 or so. And we use a heck of a lot of data from from the World Bank, the CIA, the Millennium Challenge Corporation, UNICEF, Reporters Without Borders, Amnesty International, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance, UNHCR, CDAC, Freedom House. You can imagine that we go to every possible index that's out there, and we use those to make our final consideration. When that's all done, we're down to a list of about 20 to 25 countries that are sort of, their behavior isn't egregious. Many of them are actually doing very, very good things around the world, and they score very high on these ratings. We then have about 25 lists. Each of the six volunteers will take four or five of those countries and for about 3 or 4 weeks study each country extremely diligently during the past year. What have they done right? Where have they fallen behind? What countries that were on the list last year no longer deserve to be on the list? What countries that didn't make the list last year for some tiny little reason have addressed that concern and now have really made it to the list? Then we go back and forth. Everybody looks at what everyone else has done. We compare all the data. Things come up. We look at them, you know, quite often there are things that are real sticking points for a lot of these countries, and we have to keep reminding ourselves, and I'm going to remind you before I tell you the list for this year, that no place is perfect. No country in the world is perfect. Every place has a long list of things that are wrong with it, okay? The thing with these 10 countries in the developing world is they have a really long list of things that are right with them. And there are some deal breakers, okay? There are some real deal breakers. If people are actively displacing or discriminating against indigenous people, they don't make the list, okay? As is the case with Bhutan. If people are engaged in programs to destroy their coasts, to build major hotels for multinational corporations, they don't make the list. If they have draconian laws against gays and lesbians, they don't make the list unless there is a clear indication that these laws are not enforced, okay? And that occasionally does happen. But we make contact with gay and lesbian groups in the final countries, and we say, you know, are these laws being enforced? And if they say no one here has been arrested for homosexual behavior in 2 years, that's one thing. If somebody else says, you know, there's a trial here next month, and someone's facing the death penalty for being gay, we don't care how good they are, they're not going to make the list. One very sad example of that is the country of Guyana, where I traveled in with Christina Namath of the Commonwealth Club, was also on the trip. We traveled there, I believe, in February. A wonderful country, environmentally very progressive, empowering the Amerindian tribes, but their laws against gays and lesbians are extremely draconian, and there are active campaigns to convince people not to be gay or lesbian, you know, in the churches and all. They're not on the list this year, but we hope that places that are almost on the list, if we say why they didn't make it, will understand this and make an effort to change their behavior. And so in that spirit, I would like to name the 10 countries that are the best places for you to visit in 2012. If you'd like to go someplace unusual, we have a tremendous amount of data on each of these countries. If you want to ask something about one of them in the Q&A, I'll go to this big document here. And some of them may seem a little controversial, others not so much so, and then I want to add a little footnote to it. So the 10 winning countries this year, in alphabetical order, are Argentina, the Bahamas, Chile, Costa Rica, Dominica, Palau, Mauritius, Serbia, Latvia, and Uruguay. And those are the 10 countries that this year we will be announcing. That's 10. That's 10. I'm going to run through them again in reverse alphabetical order. Uruguay, Latvia, Serbia, Mauritius, Palau, Dominica, Costa Rica, Chile, the Bahamas, Argentina. Okay? And I would just like, for instance, I want to tell you why three countries that were on last year's list fell off this year's list. And one of them is good news, two of them are good news, one of them is not good news. Barbados was on the list in 2011. It fell off because of their lack of environmental progress, continued criminalization of homosexuality, and a lot of criticism about government corruption, especially about the freedom of information and prevention of corruption. So we could not in good conscience include them this year. Lithuania and Poland were on the 2011 list, and they fall off this year because as of 2012, they're both developed countries. So they're no longer eligible for this list. And there's one more footnote I'd like to do this year, which we're doing for the first time this year, and we've never done it before, is we're going to also add, when we do our press release and report, two additional countries, which we call destinations of interest. And these are two countries that, although they are far from being on our ethical destinations top 10 list, are countries that we at Ethical Traveler feel people should absolutely try to visit for the educational value, for the person-to-person value, and for a chance to see behind the mass media and understand what's really going on in those two countries. And one of those countries is Cuba. And I had the opportunity to go there with Malia in June for the first time, and it blew my mind. Absolutely stunning what an education that was to visit Cuba for the first time. And the other place I'd like to put on the list for this year is Burma, a place that I never thought I would necessarily recommend to anyone, but the progress in Burma over the past several months has been astounding. And I just want to quote one person who was in the New York Times today, Daw Cho Cho Kyi Nyen, an opposition politician and former political prisoner whose family suffered for years of persecution by the military. The quote in the Times was, "What has happened in these last few months is a miracle for us." Mm-hmm. And based on that, I would like to just say that we're including Burma now in the list of destinations of interest. Try to visit if you can. See what's going on there for yourself. And that concludes the list of the ethical destinations. There is a hard list, if any of you are from the press. Our communications director, Michael McCall, can give you a copy. And I know Malia wants to say a little thing about Cuba, but I just want to finish my own part of the program before the Q&A with one final quote that I just love, if I can find it here. Which is sort of the backbone of everything we're trying to do at Ethical Traveler in informing people about their travels, and that Global Exchange shares with us at Reality Tours. In the words of Thomas Fuller, who was a 17th century English historian, if an ass goes a-traveling, he'll not come back a horse. So be informed, be an ethical, mindful traveler, and safe journeys.
Thank you, Jeff. How do you follow up with an ass quote? I'm not sure. I did come equipped with my own today, though.
Okay.
And I did want to chime in a little bit about just the excitement of looking at the changes that are happening both in Cuba as well as in Burma. I'm not sure what our time is, if I have a few more minutes here. But, you know, I think just in terms of my concluding observations is that, you know, all of us have not only the financial responsibilities to put our dollars, you know, what our passions and values are, but as you mentioned earlier, when we do travel, we necessarily, whether we like it or not, represent our communities. We represent the United States, and you know, we talk a lot about being an ambassador, an accidental ambassador. We have programs at Global Exchange that are called citizen diplomacy trips. And I think it's really important to highlight the fact that it is necessary and really important for many of us, or some of us, you know, to be able to travel to places where you're maybe scared, where, you know, that you're outside your comfort zone. Absolutely. The fact of the matter is that, you know, places like Burma, places like Cuba, there are places that have been very demonized by the mass media and by the history of the United States. So going to places in Southeast Asia, going to North Korea, going to Iran, you know, going to Cuba, going to the axis of evil countries and breaking bread with people who are our enemies is incredibly humbling. And I sit across from the table and realize that that mother wants the same for her child as I do. I want my children to learn and be healthy and have a better life than I have. You know, I want my parents to be able to have health care and be well tended for and die with dignity and grace. You know, there's so much that holds us together. I want clean water and beautiful vistas. And that is, again, something that is human, and it's part of the human condition, and part of, you know, when we look at human rights, we don't just talk about one right, one vote, $1. We should be looking at the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights right here in San Francisco, you know, and looking at the broader analysis of what it means to have human rights. And so, you know, when we look at places like Burma and places like Cuba, people who are struggling, you know, there are contradictions, as you mentioned, to the list. No place is perfect. You know, you look at prison and incarceration rates here in the United States. Boom! You know, people throw that at me all the time when I'm traveling. But in the case of, you know, Burma, you know, we said, nope, we're not going to go. It's really exciting to be in conversations now with Ethical Travel and say, we're going to Burma. We're going to put together, you know, a journey to Burma for the first time, because they're saying, come and witness the change and be a representative of peace and learn. You know, travel with this true spirit of ethical travel. Travel with the true spirit of social responsibility and learn and be humbled and engage and build solidarity and learn and maybe give back. In the same case of Cuba, Cuba, you know, changed my life. Personally, you know, I have extended family there, and I went with Global Exchange as a graduate student. I'm going to age my, or come up with a seat. I'm going to tell you all how old I am now. As a graduate student in 1991, finishing my master's of international relations, I actually was like, I need to go to Cuba. It was before the time of the internet and Google, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, LexisNexis, where do I find out about why Cuba went to Angola, huh? You know, and so I was told, go to Cuba, and I went, and I went with Global Exchange. And I had been to over 30 countries at that point in my life as a backpacker. And what I experienced there blew my mind. And I had been in Guatemala during the Civil War. I'd been backpacking through the Middle East and in Israel and Palestine during the First Intifada, and I'd been very humbled. But I had never had the access to the kinds of institutions, the daycare facilities, the Círculo de Abuelos, the old people's homes, the schools, the meetings with officials. You know, I've never had access like that as an individual traveler. And when I came back, I saw what a poor country did to preserve its social welfare, to preserve its, ahí las frutas de la revolución, the fruits of the revolution in education and healthcare, that as a bicultural woman just were incredibly motivating and re-inspiring to me. And anyway, years later at, you know, Global Exchange, we continue to offer, you know, programs to Cuba, and I encourage all of you to go, whether it's with the Commonwealth Club or another organization, to go legally or, dare I say otherwise, to go and exercise what should be your First Amendment right to travel wherever you want and engage with whomever you want. But anyway, for those of you who don't know, the United States has a very, very long U.S. embargo against the island of Cuba. They call it the bloqueo. And it basically dramatically seeks to enforce a political change in Cuba by impoverishing a nation of people. So whether you like Fidel or not, whether you respect the revolution or not, that's not the point. The fact of the matter is U.S. foreign policy is behind the impoverishment and undermining the human rights of the Cuban nation. And that's where it brings it back home for me. That's why, you know, travel and looking at, you know, how can we engage with our compañeros? How can we engage with our friends and not friends in Cuba and to exchange information, technology, ideas? What can we learn from them? What can we share with them? And again, that's why Cuba, to be on this list as well as Burma, is so exciting. I'm going to conclude my little presentation also with a quote. It was actually on the literature that I received from Global Exchange when I traveled with them in 1991, and I cut it out and put it next to a Far Side comic strip on my refrigerator. And it basically says, and it's from Lila Watson, who's an Australian Aboriginal activist. And it really summarizes, I think, the spirit and intention of my day-to-day, what I do, and also, I think, what we do together at Ethical Traveler, Jeff. It says, if you come here... Oh, I misquoted myself. If you come here to help me, you're wasting your time. If you come because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let us work together. Thank you.
Thank you. We can go a little over time for questions and answers, apparently, so.
Okay. I'd like to mention that you talked about human rights, and the former head of Amnesty International will be speaking at the Commonwealth Club on Monday. He's now the head of Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. My question is, there's lots of us volunteers that Peace Corps turned into traveling activists. In fact, many of them haven't returned. Have you contacted National Peace Corps Association to work with them to sponsor trips overseas for a lot of the friends of groups that are in these developing countries, working with them to get, like I would like to go to a lot of countries with other people who have been volunteers. And it's a perfect opportunity because we're all ethical destination type people that prefer going to third world countries.
It's an idea. I'll think about contacting the Peace Corps. It hadn't occurred.
The National Peace Corps Association.
National Peace Corps Association.
They do the return volunteers and work closely with Peace Corps, who does the volunteers. Questions?
Thank you. You talked about the restrictions for travel to Cuba, and I know they have to meet certain professional guidelines. Can you talk about possibly creative ways to make a visit?
To what? What was
creative
that?
To make a visit to Cuba.
I just want to giggle. I'm like, let's talk afterwards because I'm being recorded. I mean, with my Global Exchange Reality Tours hat on, what I have to say is, you know, we are a TSP, which stands for Travel Service Provider. So that basically means, you know, if you are subject to your jurisdiction, you live here, you've got a green card or work permit, you know, you need to go legally. And so that's what we recommend as Global Exchange. You know, we have to send people legally. Now, there are various ways to go, and the Obama administration did make one step forward to liberalize the policies that the Bush administration, the second one, had tightened. And so there are these people-to-people travel licenses or these specific licenses that are now being granted to different organizations and tour providers, for example, that are really seek to enhance that people-to-people general cultural exchange. Correct. So that means if you're an undergrad or retiree or everything between, you can go. But there have been for years what's called general license requirements, which basically means, like, you know, there's these standards, or if you will, legal loopholes. There's these ways for you to be able to go to travel and do so legally, but the individual has to really know what they are. So you can go on the Treasury Department website, educate yourself, figure out how you could go legally. You know, professionals for professional development, that's how we've basically sent 80% of our travelers over the last 5 years has been, oh, we're going to do healthcare delegations and education and cultural trips, et cetera. And I'm not sure what the Commonwealth Club's trip, if it's people-to-people or professional. But again, if it's people-to-people, anybody can go. But you just have to genuinely be interested in participating on the program. For professionals, you know, they can go for conferences and research or on other trips like Global Exchange or others that basically look at or investigate a particular issue. And you can even write it off on your taxes. So there's definitely some good things that are involved with that. And then there's also, of course, religious licenses and humanitarian licenses and things like that. But, again, that's another thing that we should be pushing for. You know, we can travel to other countries around the world, even access of evil countries. So why can't we travel to Cuba? Again, that's something that we need to be pushing to end those travel restrictions as U.S. citizens.
Hi, so I've just got a couple of comments, not so much questions. So for Cuba, I went to Cancun a few years ago, so I can talk to you afterwards about how to go to Cancun and enjoy all that Cuba has to offer.
Don't say your name.
No. I'll be exiting shortly. And I also wanted to put in a plug for hopefully in maybe the not-too-distant future, Iran will make your short list of countries that are going on the right path. I was the crazy person that I mentioned to Jeff earlier. I had gone to his show, Strange Travel Suggestions, a few years ago and was fortunate enough that one of the stories he told that night was about an experience he had in Iran, and he just brought the country to life, and I was so fascinated by it, I just made a mental note, I've got to go there someday, that sounds incredible. And long story short, I did, and it was wonderful, and as always, as these folks have said, the impressions that you have of folks in these countries couldn't be more different than the reality. So it's a wonderful place to go, and don't rule out the axis of evil. So I couldn't say enough good things about the people there, maybe not so much the government.
Thank you so much for your comment.
I just wonder if there isn't an argument to be made that, well, first of all, you seem to be operating a little bit at cross purposes. The places that you recommend, but I, you know, frankly, your list of 10 countries, with the exception of Serbia, which is sort of interesting, to me sounds boring. I mean, I guess maybe I look for places that are, I don't want to say political hotspots, but at least places that people that are in the news a lot. And I actually took one of the earlier tours to Iran about at least 10 years ago. And it was such an eye-opener for me, one of the most important trips I ever took in my life. But, I mean, I just got back about 2 months ago. I was in Myanmar. And that also was a complete eye-opener. I happen to think I catch it on the very edge of of a wave of change. But I think about it overtly, but I do end up going to places that I guess I expect a little bit of pushback.
Well, can I address this? Because, I mean, what you say is true. And there's a lot of people in this room and myself and many of my fellow travelers here included who like going to places that push us out of our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of other people in the world who like to go to places where there are nice beaches or where they can, you know, eat nice food or be more comfortable. This list is mainly oriented towards, you know, the vast majority of travelers who get in the United States who get 2 or 3 weeks a year and really want to take time this maybe off a little bit from their, you know, their very active lives. And all of these countries on our list are very, very interesting. And for each one of them, we have this whole list of things that they offer. There are some places that don't make the list because they don't have anything to offer. But a lot of these places, I mean, Argentina, Chile, Latvia, Palau. Palau was a huge surprise. I mean, when I went there, I was fascinated by Palau, their ancient culture in the South Pacific, the greatest scuba diving I've ever experienced in my life. I mean, a lot of these places have hidden treasures, and these places are hidden treasures. They're not the go-to places that most travelers would think of, like Thailand or France or Angkor in Cambodia. You know, they're places that are maybe on your B list. We're saying for a lot of reasons, including what they have to offer that you might not be aware of, think about putting them on your A list next year.
Yeah, can I chime in on that too? Thank you for traveling with us and also mentioning that. I mean, I want to chime in with Argentina, for example. I think any of these countries, you can dig a little deeper and go off the beaten path a little bit. I mean, everybody thinks about Buenos Aires and the tango and the gaucho culture and the amazing meat dishes for those of you that love to eat, you know, meat. But, you know, we have so much to learn from Argentina, for example, in terms of how they survived the collapse of neoliberalism there. I mean, it's amazing when you look at the fact that what we are facing is a global economic crisis, and here in the United States, they dealt with. So what can we learn from them? You know, there's these cooperative mothers. We have other partners, for example, we've been working with, like La Vaca Cooperative and others, that have incredible models of really reorganizing their social and their labor practices to be able to, you know, thrive again, not just survive. So again, there are other ways for us to just dig a little deeper, go off the normal travel, you know, beaten path, and see what we have to learn from.
Is there any reason that there's only one country in Africa that you have put on there?
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, there's several other countries we really wanted to put on the list in Africa, and they all fell off for various reasons because of corruption, draconian laws against homosexuality, or in the case of Namibia, which we have included in the past and have a campaign in the works about, their practice of clubbing to death thousands of fur seals every year for the financial benefit of one individual. And that's actually under study right now in Namibia. We're very involved in that situation, and if they manage to do something about that practice, they probably will make our list next year. Ghana has made our list in the past. Mm-hmm. Botswana has come very close. Seychelles has been on the list. That's an African country. But it's very hard. There's a lot of challenges in Africa, and we're very happy to be able to include Mauritius on our list this year, a place that I really don't know much about, but after looking through all the research, I definitely would like to go there. I just want to say something. I meant to say really quickly. I want to give a shout out to Christy Hoover. I don't know if she's in the room or not. Oh, there you are. Hi. Okay. Who's one of our prime researchers and has done a lot of the grunt research, you know, the really digging for a lot of these, destinations. And I just want to say thank you, Christy, and for your efforts on that behalf. And also to our other staff members, Greg Rutensky, our web designer, mm-hmm. Michael McCall, our communications director, and Andy DePascale, our other web designer, and Samantha Chen, our travel director, because we're also doing a trip to Cuba with Global Exchange, and some board members too. So, I just wanted to give that shout out, and I think we have time for a couple more questions if anybody has anything they want to ask. I see a hand there.
If I can just follow up on her question, one of the places I visited in the last 18 months of backpacking was Ethiopia. And I went there expecting only to be interested in Lalibela, and I ended up staying for 2 months. Wow. And I was totally taken with the culture and the history of the country. And when I go, I read the newspapers. And I just, I have to say, I don't know what about the country that would keep it off your list. And I can't, you know, I only spent 2 months there, so I didn't can't see I did that much. And they have their issues.
I don't either, yeah.
But it is a very interesting, culturally extraordinarily rich. But I'm just not sure. I was quite impressed with what I saw going on in terms of educational development. And
thanks. I'll look into that and see why it didn't make the list this year. I'm not exactly sure.
Hi.
Hello.
Thank you for the work that you both do. I know that National Geographic Traveler publishes a destination scorecard in their Traveler magazine, I think maybe once a year. I'm just wondering where the list is published and how folks can find it if they're listening on the radio or if they're here today and want to follow up.
This list will appear when it's finalized on our website, and Michael McCall, our communications director, will send out a press release, and then it's generally pretty widely published. I think last year was in more than 200 periodicals, I think including the Getney Reader, USA Today, CNN. So it does get a fair amount of attention, but we haven't done the press release yet. We're kind of waiting right now to see what unfolds in Serbia, as there's the little bit of a conflict right now in the Kosovo border. And we'll be finalizing our list within the next couple of weeks and issuing the press release. And at that point, people can just go to our website and download the list, as well as the full report of how we arrived at our decisions. And there's a lot of methodology behind that we don't publish, but that's available to people if they want to see it. So thanks. It's a really good question.
When you read off your list, I was initially shocked to hear you begin with Argentina, which certainly 10 or 15 years ago would not have qualified for your
True.
List. But because of the financial debacle that struck the country, we have Argentina on your list. And that got me to thinking, I can't wait till next year or the year after when we can visit Greece and perhaps Italy.
Oh, no. Watch out, the U.S. may be on that. No, I'm just kidding. Bad humor.
Yeah, so definitely there's a lot of countries that didn't make the list but also have a lot to offer in terms of history or culture or nature, a lot to be seen.
Certainly.
I happen to have grown up in one of them, Egypt. So I'm just curious, you know, there's a lot of ethical travelers out there, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of people that, even though that will go to places other than what's on the list, are there any resources on how to spend our money in a way that would help these places? Mm-hmm. Other than just spending our money in the places that we know will use it wisely, or will not go towards, you know, any unethical.
You mean in countries that aren't on the list?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Malia, look,
yeah, or just in general. I mean, even bringing up Egypt, you know, like looking at the incredible, you know, transformations that are happening there. I know we're running, you know, our first program, you know, looking at the political changes a year later. And I think, you know, the same model can really be held across the board. And so while we may not be able to change the nature of, you know, how you're necessarily leaving SFO and arriving into Cairo, you know, what we can do is say, you know, let's look at, you know, who owns the hotels. I mean, sometimes it's difficult because you'll call and you'll say, all right, well, this little beautiful bed and breakfast or this little three-star or four-star hotel, well, who owns you? I know, for example, I'm doing a very high-end trip to Turkey, and it's really challenging at times, and especially also in Mexico, like looking, okay, well, where am I going to put this group that needs to have access to all the technology and the internet at night, et cetera, and want a gym in the morning, you know? But they're there. So, you know, you have to do, again, the due diligence of asking the questions. And if it's not on their website when you see the About Us, if they even have a website, you know, it's one of those things of really asking. And, you know, to be honest with you, another incredible resource around the world is the ministries of tourism. You know, I remember, you know, at these travel conferences or, you know, meeting people who work for them, you know, for example, in Jordan and other countries. And I can email them or call them up and say, I'm looking for a local tour operator, you know, somebody who is a national, where I know that our money is going to benefit local labor. And then you start to engage with them. I'm doing that now in Zambia. Like, okay, we need to stay at hotels that are locally or nationally owned. Local is always the benefit, you know, you want it to go to a family. But if not, it could be a national chain. And then it looks at, if you can't find that, maybe the third question is, okay, well, what are your labor and environmental practices if you're a joint venture? You know, or what are, you know, if you're an eco lodge in the middle of the Amazon, how are you interacting with the local community or the indigenous community around there? Are there your guides? What is your natural resource use? I mean, again, it's being informed and really asking poignant questions. And then not just saying, okay, I'll stay with you, but really shopping around. And that, of course, is labor intensive, and a lot of people don't want to take that extra act. But it's really doing that. And then transportation providers, same thing. You know, and in the big souvenir stores, yeah, don't go to the beautiful market that's right across from the port where everything's owned by the state or the, you know, the richest person in town. You know, look for the fair trade cooperative, look for the local artisan groups, travel 20 miles outside town and visit with the pottery, you know, the potter cooperatives, and, you know, learn about the story and the history behind the culture of these crafts, purchase from them directly. Again, it doesn't even have to be fair trade, but again, your purchase can make a real difference in the lives of those communities.
I'll just wrap up with one last comment, if that's okay, Christina. Just that one of the questions I get asked whenever I'm on the radio and whenever I do an interview is, what is ethical travel? You know, how do you define ethical travel? And it's really simple. Ethical travel is just, as Malia just put it so beautifully, it's just mindful travel. It's just traveling with an awareness of where your money's going, how you're presenting yourself, who you're benefiting, and that involves asking questions. And I think if you do that, you know, it's really a great thing. It'll improve your experience, and it'll improve the experience of the people who you're visiting. So just be mindful when you travel, and you're really halfway there.
All right. Well, thank you so much to our speakers. Thank you to Jeff Greenwald, travel writer and director of Ethical Traveler, and to Malia Everett, director of Global Exchange Reality Tours. And thank you to all of you for coming and to our audience listening online or on the radio. And now tonight's program of the Commonwealth Club is officially adjourned.
Christina, I'm not a gavel.